Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi, and welcome to Self-Improvement Atlas, the Personal Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm Marie Stella, your host from Melbourne, Australia. Let's start the show. Welcome back to the show. Retirement is almost like an end goal for many. We spend most of our lives working towards this one perceived state of grace. And most of the time, when we think about retirement planning, the first thing that comes to mind is finance. But is there more to planning for retirement, and how much? Well, to answer this question, we're speaking to applied developmental psychologist Deborah Heiser. She recently wrote an article in Psychology Today about the three common fears of retirement and how to manage them. Hi, Deborah. Lovely having you on the show. How are you going today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your own day to come and just share some of your knowledge. So I'm really curious to know, what are the three common fears of retirement, and how did you identify them as fears that are common? Was this something you noticed through talking with family or friends, or perhaps your clients?
Yes, this is actually something that I've found through working with clients. I've been in the field since the 1990s, so I've had a lot of time to hear from people about some of their fears about retirement. And the three fears are not having any money, losing their identity, and having health problems. So what I've noticed over the course of time is that people have a fear of aging, and part of that is tied into retirement. And part of that is all wrapped up in how we think about how we age. We think that we have a very high, steep incline with our physical ability and then a slow, steady decline physically. And that's scary to people. Yeah. And a lot of that is tied up in how they think about it.
Yeah. Do you think that some of it has to also do with like the perception of what, you know, old age means and what it means to be a certain age?
Oh, absolutely. If you ask people, I'll give you an example. I used to go to cocktail parties and I'd tell people I was an aging specialist and they'd try their hardest to run away from me because that's the most boring and scary person you can encounter at a cocktail party, because that's someone who's reminding you of your mortality. People think of all of the things. If you ask a person, and I ask my students every year in the classes, what do you think is old? And they'll say 30. And they'll also say that the things that they have to look forward to are things like walkers and being unhealthy, being a burden to others, not having a real identity, and being poor. So this doesn't really change much, even as we get older and have jobs, and even if we're feeling secure. That mindset continues throughout, and that affects our view on retirement.
That's really interesting, and that's such a great introduction to our topic for today. But while I can't speak from personal experience of retirement drawing near, I do have some family members who are hoping to retire in the near future. And so hopefully I'll learn a thing or two from you about their experience, how it will be, and how to support them. But before we get started, we'd like to get to know you better. This is Have You Met Deborah? My first question for you is, what is your favorite book?
You know, my favorite book is still Marie Curie. And I read it when I was a kid, and I still love it today.
What are some of your favorite things about the book? Why is it so close to your heart?
Because it was the first book where I read a girl who was someone who was so powerful, and she did everything. She got married, she had children, but she was still someone who was regarded for her brain and was taken seriously. And I remember as a kid thinking that was great, and I've never stopped liking that book. It was written by her daughter also, the autobiography. So I thought it was pretty cool.
That is so sweet. Is Marie Curie a role model for you as well?
I went to a completely different area, but yeah, she is a role model. She's someone who followed her passion and never wavered, and she never stopped. She continued on her whole life.
Yeah, she's just amazing, and she's just so, like, her tenacity, I feel like, is one of her most admirable traits. Many, many admirable traits, obviously, but the tenacity is something that I truly admire as well. But in your personal life, do you have a role model of your own?
Oh my gosh, I have a million role models. I think that my first role model was my grandfather. And after that, you know, currently right now, I think that pretty much everybody who's on the board of the Mentor Project is my role model. I really get up and say, I want to be like them today.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the qualities that you admire about your role models?
They are people who are passionate about what they do. They're caring and kind. They want the world to be a better place. And they work really, really hard, even when they don't have to make things better. I like that in people.
I do love that in people as well. It's like when you don't even need to do something, but you do it anyway. That's just incredible. And that inspires me too. Now, as for movies, are there any that you've been watching recently that you've enjoyed?
You know, every year at this time, I watch Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And I like the 1950 version, I think, with Alistair Sim. And so that's what I'm watching now. And it has some, the reason I like it is it's tied into developmental psychology, which most people wouldn't know if they watched it, but it is.
When you're a professional and you're watching or consuming any type of media, anytime you can like pinpoint something that's relevant to your career or your industry, you will. And it's just, it feels more gratifying, doesn't it?
It does. I love to find that. And then I keep watching them over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. Now, as for podcasts, are there any that you listen to at the moment?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually a junkie. I was hooked on How I Built This for a long time. I like a lot of the NPR. I love news on podcasts. And of course, now yours. So,
well, thank you.
So yeah, I have a lot that I listen to.
What is one podcast that if someone said you have to choose one, pick one favorite, what would you choose?
If I had to choose right now out of all of my favorites, I still think it would be How I Built This. I love hearing how people have their journey and how they build programs and are entrepreneurial.
What are some things that you've learned through listening to that podcast?
I've learned that nothing is easy, that you have to work really hard for whatever you want. And when you really want something, it doesn't feel like hard work.
Mm-hmm. That is some awe-inspiring stuff. And I feel like we got to know you a bit better. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Now we're moving on to the interview section. And my first question for you is, how would you define personal development?
So as a developmental psychologist, I think of personal development as starting from birth, going all the way through to the end of life. And it's all the aspects, emotional, physical, cognitive. It's all of those things that we're constantly doing. And we never rest with it. We're always looking to learn and to better ourselves in a multitude of different ways. So it's essentially learning and incorporating that into our development through the end of the life.
Yeah. And on the other hand, how would you define retirement planning?
Retirement planning is something that should be done by everyone, but it isn't always. Retirement planning is something that is necessary, but often scary. The same as getting healthcare checkups or going to the dentist. We don't all love it, but we have to do it.
Yeah, I'll admit, I'm one of those people afraid to go and get healthcare checkups. So when is a good time to start planning for retirement?
It's really good to start early. And, you know, I'll give an example even. we had a plan that was given to us when I started a job years ago, and I have a retirement plan. I didn't even think about it, but I opted in and I went the aggressive route and put more money in. And I'm super thankful now because I didn't do anything but check a box at the time, and I could have meant having a little bit more money for myself. But now I'm very thankful that I did that. It was more like I opened up a you know, an envelope and had money in it for retirement that I hadn't even thought about. So as early as you can, you don't feel the pain of planning for retirement if you're setting it up when you're really young, because you don't even miss it. You don't miss any of the $10 that you would have had in your paycheck that is now going to something else.
Yeah. And you probably also don't have as many health issues that you've got to put money into as well. Whereas when you're older, you probably need that money saved to get medication, get prescriptions, you know, take care of yourself and all of your health issues. But I also wanted to ask, how do you think retirement planning would contribute to one's personal development?
Well, there are a few things. You know, I only mentioned finance before, but there are several things involved in retirement. And, you know, one of them is identity. So the reason I say finance is because finance is something that really is scary for people, no matter what age we are. You know, it doesn't go away or get better with retirement. Yeah. But losing our identity or feeling like we might lose our identity is part of personal development. And if we are thinking of our personal development throughout our life as people who never stop developing, then we don't look as fearfully towards retirement as someone who thinks, my development is just for my career or my job. I think I like to tell people our identity is not on a business card. Our identity is all of the things that make up everything about us. And when we retire, that doesn't go away. So I think that personal development is tied up into our identity, our emotions, our cognitive abilities, the things that we seek out as, you know, learning ways that we learn. That can be travel, you know, learning about culture, other things, or going places. Our personal development is very broad.
Completely. And it sounds like, well, in the way that you're putting it, sounds like retirement planning is almost, in a way, it's like investing in yourself.
Yes, we put so much time, energy, and effort into saying, let me get myself to college. Let me get myself a house. Let me get myself a spouse. Let me get myself all of these things. And then retirement is the, now what? It's like this big chasm, and we don't know what's out there, and it's scary. So if we start planning now and we say, you know what? When I finish work, there are all of these things I'd love to be able to do to, you know, continue my personal development. That may be taking up things that you've never done before. It could be painting. It could be art. It could be that you go for another degree. There's someone I know who was one of our mentors, and she went back to Harvard University at 60. And that was what she decided to do, has a career pivot, has made a change. She's now in Washington, D.C., doing a great job with something new, with new people she never would have worked with before. And I think that that's how we need to look at retirement, as what do I want to do next, as opposed to how can I rest?
That's amazing. It sounds like it's almost like a second life.
Yes, it is. It's the one that we are doing that doesn't have the stress or pressure of raising children and the stress or pressure of, I better be earning a certain amount of money to be able to take care of everybody. There are those pressures that leave us in retirement.
Yeah. So what is the importance of finding meaning and fulfillment in retirement? Are there any negative effects to not having this meaning and fulfillment when you're retired?
Yes. So I'm glad you brought this up, because this is part of identity. It's part of all of it. Most of us, we all need meaning. And when we hit midlife, there's a life stage that we enter, and that's called generativity. And the reason I like the movie, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol is that we see Scrooge in that. And many of us have, this is not the norm, but this, we can imagine this, and we all know people like this. Scrooge was a self-made man. He lived in a mansion. He had people taking care of him. He had servants, but he was miserable. He had everything on paper that he should have, but he had no meaning. He had no joy. It wasn't until he started giving back, and that's what being generative is, that he experienced joy. And that's exactly how it works in real life. That's why I love that movie, because it really does show how it can work. So if we are not finding meaning in our life, if we're not meaningfully connected with others and doing things that are giving back in some way, we become like Scrooge. Or that bitter person. We all know that kind of person, that bitter person. But the pivot can be like that, so quick, like a snap of a finger, that we can pivot and turn and find joy and meaning. So meaning is unbelievably important, because that's when we are saying, did my life matter? Do I matter? Did all those boxes I checked make a difference in the world? Do I have a footprint? Do I have a legacy? That's where meaning is all tied up, and retirement is right around that time that that'll kicks in.
It's amazing what movies can teach us. So what role does personal passion and interest play in determining a fulfilling retirement? And how should people go about identifying what passions they should pursue?
You know, people, look, I'm sure that there are people who love to fold laundry. But that generally is a passionless project, right? And nobody has to think twice about that. Nobody's going to say, I want to sit in a room and fold laundry all day, every day. But everyone can think of something they like or that they want to do. And so if you just make it that simple and you say, what do I enjoy? And you follow that, then you're going to find it. You just are saying to yourself, what is it that I don't want to spend my time doing? For me, it'll be laundry. And for others, it might be loading the dishwasher. But what I'm getting at with this is that a passion, it shouldn't be so much work that you have to say, let me go take notes and figure it out. If you're doing something that you don't even have to think about that you want to go do it, elaborate on that and just keep doing it. Keep doing more of that. Don't put judgment on it.
Yeah. And what about, well, for lack of better phrasing, but there are people out there who don't have, well, or think they don't have passion for anything at all, or not enough to go and pursue it. How would you recommend them approaching this then?
I would dial it back. So I would say, why is it that you're not feeling passion? Usually that's because there's not a feeling of strong identity about something. So If you're feeling like you don't have a strong identity and where you are in the moment, it's going to be harder to find a passion project, because the passion just comes from you and who you are and how you feel about yourself. So it's not unusual for a person to have maybe a pause in how they feel about their identity. So if you end up retiring from a job and you say, oh my gosh, who am I now? I was, you know, the CEO of a company. And now who am I? I don't have any power in my life, or whatever it is. You might have a pause in that and say, where do I look to find my passion now? So the thing I have people do is to walk it back and say, let's talk about your identity. Who are you? Who are you outside of what you did for your job? And most of the time, I've not yet had someone who has not been able to find their identity and who they are at their core. Once that happens, passion sort of explodes out of the person.
Mm-hmm. And with regards to learning, do you think it's an important part in finding meaning and fulfillment in retirement as well?
Absolutely. Meaning is very much tied to learning. Every time we're able to learn more about something, we're actually learning more about ourselves. When you take something in, it becomes a part of you and adds to you, and that adds to your identity and how you think and feel about the world and about yourself and about your role in the world. So learning should be done all the way, and we do learn all the way through to the end of life, but we often think we're done learning when we're done with school, but we're not. So we should be learning from our grandchildren, from our friends, from our family, and taking all of that in, but being aware of that and acknowledging it.
Absolutely. I feel like I say this a lot. I feel like we learn something all the time. Even if you're not aware of it, you're learning something. And learning, I don't know, I just feel like this misconception that learning's just about, like, it's just academia or education, but it's far more than that. You learn a lot from your family members, your loved ones as well, all the time. And sometimes it's unintentional. You might not even notice it, but you're learning. So are there any recommended ways for retirees to continue learning and growing?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the ways that we can do that is by being aware of and acknowledging every interaction that we have with someone. So for example, prior to us meeting up, there was Aiden, and he taught me all about a whole lot of things that I didn't know about tech. And I really acknowledge that as a new learning. I learned a lot today. In like half an hour, I took in stuff. It's also the perspective. When we're able to take another person's perspective and learn from that, it makes us feel better. It makes us feel more connected to other people. So the suggestions that I have are to be much more intentional about how we're interacting with people. And it should not be seen as what can I get from that person, or how am I going to move past this interaction to something else. It should be very intentional. How can I help this person? Do I know something that might help them? And how might they teach me something? And then that brings us a deeper meaning and helps us to move along. It's free, it's easy, and we're built to do this. Our whole way of being generative is built to want to engage in that way with others. So that's the biggest, freest thing we can do.
And that sounds like a great perspective to adopt even before retirement.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
So retirees tend to also just have a lot of time on their hands. So are there any specific activities or opportunities that would be particularly rewarding to have?
Yes. First of all, I will say, social, get social and be social and remain social, because loneliness is something that is a problem when we don't have our social calendars going. We crave and we need, and we're built for connecting with others. So as long as you can remain connected in things that you're enjoying, whether that's a book club can be very powerful, even if it's online, but if it's something where you're, you know, involved with other people, it can be that you're going out with others, but really setting that up as early as possible, that you have outside activities that are making you as social as possible. Some people have said, well, what if I can't get out as much, you know, when I'm older? Getting yourself involved with regular contact with other people, and being as social as you can with others, whether that's online, on Zoom, on the phone, having people come to your home, in whatever way you can, that is really important. In terms of recent retirees who are very capable and able, the best recommendation and the biggest boost for people is to get involved in social groups, mm-hmm. and really try to make yourself, whether that's pickleball, which is like the new thing that everybody's doing, or that is engaging in more cognitive activities with others.
And what are some of the challenges that might arise from attempting to be more social or learn during retirement, or just, well, in general, find meaning during retirement?
So some of the issues that people face is that when you're at work, you don't have to worry about that. You go every day and you socialize. You have a set schedule, and whatever it is that you're doing, there's a schedule and it's set, and you're talking with people because you have to, because you work. When you retire, all of that goes away and you have to create it for yourself. So you have to get yourself into a schedule, and you have to get yourself into a place where you're meeting with people. That's why some people say, I don't want to stop working. I'm going to work through retirement, and that's okay. People will take on part-time things. They'll do that sort of a thing where they'll maybe go teach or they'll do something like that. The three ways that you can get incredibly involved, though, in retirement are volunteering, mentoring, and philanthropy. Those are the three legs of the stool of generativity. And those are going to be bringing you meaning. You can start that as early as you'd like, but we have the bandwidth to do it right around retirement because we don't have as many obligations.
I really like your use of the word bandwidth. And there was so much emphasis on that. That was a good one. So what are some common misconceptions about retirement and how should individuals reframe that mindset to make the most out of this stage of life?
So one of the misconceptions is that people are going to be unhealthy. And generally, people are not. They're pretty much fine. The only thing I'd say is make sure that you continuously go to get health checkups because that keeps you healthy. But people can expect to live long, happy, healthy lives. That is the trend. It is an outlier to be unhappy and unhealthy. And so that's one of the biggest misconceptions. The other is that people will be depressed when they are retired. And that is also not the case. That is an outlier. That is not the norm. So what most people can look forward to in retirement is a life where they're going to find meaning and fulfillment by getting engaged in things like mentoring, volunteering, and philanthropy. They're going to be generative. They're going to have more time to enjoy and feel fulfilled that they have a legacy. They're going to be able to choose who they leave their legacy with and how. And they're going to be able to see that they're leaving a mark on the world. There's nothing more powerful than knowing that you meant something on the world. And that is what most retirees do not know exists, but it does. And when they see it, it's unbelievably exciting for retirees to find that.
So we hear a lot about retirees who end up coming out of retirement because they miss work and they realize that they're not ready quite yet to retire. So what are some signs that someone might not quite yet be at the emotional and mental capacity to take on the next stage of life?
I feel like sometimes people shouldn't retire. They should keep working. They need it. It fuels them. That is their passion. Some people are fortunate enough to find work to be their passion, and they should continue working. It doesn't mean they have to work a 60-hour week. It can mean that you work 1, 2, 3 days a week. It can mean that you just go in every morning to get structure. Some people, though, should never formally retire, and I'm a big believer in that. I think that when people do choose that, if it's not because they have a fear of not having enough money, but they're doing it because it's a passion, go for it.
Absolutely. That kind of reminds me of my dad. He's one of those people that like work is just his entire life. And I remember like he is planning to retire within the next couple of years. And I am concerned because that he was unemployed for like a couple of years, or I think 1 year actually, like a few years back. And he was not okay. Like he was doing all sorts of things that he normally wouldn't do, but he wasn't that happy. He started like looking into everyone's rooms and like kind of clearing stuff out for some reason. And it just wasn't the best time for him. So I'm just wondering like maybe he should not retire or at least not formally. I don't know. But then again, it's something that he kind of has to figure out for himself, I suppose.
Well, he may have, first of all, when you are not working, when your kids are younger, there's a different feeling than when you retire. There are two different feelings that we have. One is, uh-oh, I better be doing this. It's the norm that I should be working at this time. It has a different feel to it. But also, a lot of people feel the need to be productive. Productivity is really a powerful thing that we all feel. Who gets up and says, I want to be unproductive today? You know, you might like that for an hour or two, or maybe one day a week, you know, that you're not productive, but 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year is not what most of us want, feeling unproductive. So if a person is really thriving on feeling productive, which that's a good thing, then it's finding productive things. So if a person starts cleaning or doing things like that, they're trying to be productive.
Yeah.
And it can be that, hey, maybe it's within mentoring, volunteering, and philanthropy that you want to be productive. And under, if you're looking at each of those things, where can that be? As soon as you're able to pinpoint that, that's where that energy that a person has can be put there, where they'll feel like they're being productive.
That's really, really interesting. And it sounds like a great opportunity to give back to whatever community someone cares about too. Now, could you share some examples of individuals or people that you may or may not know or have heard of who have successfully found purpose in their retirement?
Oh, for sure. Well, I talked to you about briefly about Janice, who decided to go back to college, or she got a master's and went back and is now working more than she's ever worked before. But I once met with someone who was a teacher, and she said, oh, I'm just beside myself. I don't know what to do. I don't have any skills. I have nothing. It's going to be a vast wasteland, this retirement. And it turned out, I said, gee, I noticed these beautiful paintings. And she said, oh yeah, I paint. And I said, well, have you ever considered doing more of that? She said, no, not really. And I said, why don't you give it a try? It turned out she started selling her art and became quite well known and was able to make that transition. She'd never thought of her hobby as something worthwhile to pursue in her retirement. And when she did, it became something much bigger than a hobby. And that's what sort of the passion was that fueled it. Another example is someone who decided they moved from being an artist and decided that they wanted to travel and do things. So they became a bus driver.
And wow.
So, but the neat thing was that person was able to drive sports teams to all of their games, and they got to be down on the field for the games. So they kept doing that as a way to continue with doing something that that person was never going to be able to afford to do. They got to meet all the players. They got to do all this cool stuff and this neat travel and stay in nice hotels. And it was a lifestyle change that was like the most creative sort of change that a person had that I thought it was just, I wouldn't have come up with that. And some people do things like Habitat for Humanity, where they'll go and they'll give back in countries and in places where they weren't able to do that when they were younger, but then now they're able to do it. That's pretty common.
Completely. That sounds so amazing. And these stories are incredible. I'm looking forward to retirement because of this. Now, beyond self-purpose and financial planning, are there any more other aspects to retirement that should be taken into account?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I will say once more, just do regular health checkups, because if you catch something early, you can get it taken care of right away and it's not a problem. But the other thing is to do identity checks regularly and to do check-ins and to say, where am I with this? And the other thing is, it's never too early to start to think about generativity. And that is to think at any given year or age that you are, how can I give back to others? Because it's when we give back that we have a sense of immortality. When a little piece of us lives on in somebody else, we feel sort of like we're immortal. And we do that through those three things that I was mentioning, which is volunteering, philanthropy, and mentoring. And it doesn't matter if you don't have money, two out of the three of those are free. And they're the things that will give you literally give you the most meaning in your life when you give back to somebody else and you see that their life has changed, it changes yours as well.
That's great advice. Now, you've given us a lot of exceptional advice this episode, but last question for you. I wanted to ask you if any more advice at all for people who might be struggling with a sense of loss or identity after retirement, especially from a long and fulfilling career.
Yeah, that's not uncommon for people who've had a long career. It's also not uncommon for a person who retires early in their life. So this is more common than people think. That could be a teacher, that could be in the United States at least, it could be someone in the military, it could be someone who's a police officer, a fireman. People get to retire very early. So it can be that, or someone who's had a very long, fulfilling career where you say, uh-oh, who am I? So when you're going to do the identity check, the first thing that I like to remind people is to say, okay, when you're going right back to where you were before you started working, let's go back to that. What are some of the core things that you think about yourself? And try to get them to think in terms of what is it about themselves that they like and that they want to continue with? And what are the things that they feel like they're most competent in? And everyone is competent. If it's a grandma that makes chicken soup better than anybody else, it doesn't matter who you are. Everyone has an identity core. So trying to get back to that, if you've had a very long career and you're leaving your job and you're saying, I've always been X, you know, I've always been a professor, a lawyer, whatever it is, a teacher, and you're leaving, what is it that you have ever, what is it that was in the core of your job that you can take outside of it? Was it that you're a hard worker? Is it you're productive? Is that you're someone who cares about others? Is it that you are the person that everyone looks to for guidance? Are you the person that's the rock of the foundation? What is it about you? And that piece, that nugget, can be moved outside to retirement. And that's where you build on that. And you say, okay, you are somebody who's a hard worker and you're productive and everybody relies on you. So let's get you involved in something, in volunteering or mentoring or philanthropy that involves you in those. But you have to take that core and know where that is, because if you just take somebody and say, go volunteer at the zoo, that may not be what gets them going. It has to match with what their identity is.
Can you imagine someone like just despising animals and you send them to a zoo to do charity work? Yeah, they're not going to enjoy that. They're not going to appreciate that at all.
They aren't, because the value has to come from the individual. Mm-hmm. If you're an animal lover, that could be the best. But we all think that anything to do with giving back holds equal value, and it doesn't. It has to match the person's inner identity.
Yeah. That is so well put. And I feel like that's probably where all of the evaluating who you are as a person and the identity checks would come in handy as well. So thank you so much, Deborah, for sharing that with us. Now we're moving on to the practices and habits section. Now, the first question for you is, what is a habit that you recommend practicing for someone who wants to evaluate their plans for retirement?
I would say have a check for yourself in terms of three things. The three things that everyone is scared of. Make sure that you're going to have that checklist and say to yourself, have I looked at my money? Do I even know how much I need? I better, you know, talk to an accountant or a financial advisor. The next thing is to say, do I even know who I am? And to start to think about that. And finally, health. This is the easiest. Make all of your doctor plans. You know, some people do it once a year at a specific time. They do it at the end of the year, the beginning of the year, in the summer. Pick your time. And maybe it's what you go every year for your birthday around that time. Pick a time and go get all of your health checkups every single year. So it's really pretty easy to be able to manage all of this.
And how often should we be practicing these?
It should be, the way should we should be looking at it is all the time, but all the time means with health, you go once a year. If they say, hey, you need to come back for follow-up, if you go to the dentist and they say you have a cavity, you're going to have to go back. So if you start out with once a year, you're going to do the contacting. Once a year, I'm going to call all my doctors. Once a year, I'm going to call the, you know, wealth manager or an accountant or somebody who's a financial planner, and I'm going to ask them their professional advice instead of my own. I certainly would not rely on myself. Mm-hmm. I would go to a professional. And so that's once a year. But if they say, hey, we need you to check in four times a year, then you do that. But this could be something you set up that you say every January, when I do my New Year's resolution, I'm going to do this. And the third thing is that we all have to remember that part of our identity is our personal development. What are you setting for your year to be the personal development that you're going to be working on? And that should not be that I get up and I go to work every day. It should be, what thing am I going to do that is going to work on personal development? And that can be right along with the money. The health is your personal development / identity that you say, I'm going to target this one thing this year.
Once again, really, really great advice from you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And now we're moving on to the open mic section. And this is your opportunity to talk about whatever that you're passionate about. And it doesn't have to be related to the topic, but if it is, you can talk about that too. So the floor is yours. Take it away.
Great. I'm super passionate about, and this is what I did. I pivoted. Working as an aging researcher to working in the field of mentoring. I founded the Mentor Project, and we have about 100 world-class experts, from astronauts to astrophysicists to artists, who give back. They mentor students around the world for free. So we had one artist who went to Tanzania last year and taught 500 kids cartooning. He's a well-known cartoonist for Schultz Creative Studios. He does Snoopy and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so this project is a goal, and it's part of my identity, is to make sure that people around the world are able to get access to things that they may have never had access to, and that it's free to them. So the Mentor Project is something that people can contact us on our website. Schools can reach out to us. We love connecting with people all over the world to make a difference. But getting back to how this fits in with retirement, this is one of those three components of generativity, which is volunteering, mentoring, and philanthropy. And I decided to choose mentoring because I found out that in retirement, a lot of experts, we'd think they must be inundated with people seeking them out to become mentors, but they're disconnected when they're high up enough that, you know, how many of us would say, how do I even know how to contact an astronaut? So we all know the difficulties when we're starting out, how hard it is to find a mentor, but mentors have just the same difficulty finding mentees. And retirees need that outlet if they want to be able to give back to others. So the project called the Mentor Project has been able to make an impact. I think we've had more than 100,000 impressions with people through the various ways in which we've been connecting virtually and in person with people. So that is my passion. That is the platform that I'm working on. And if people are interested in mentorship, look at mentorproject.org.
That sounds like a fantastic project. And as someone who has been looking for a mentor myself, I'm blown away. I have been thinking about it, and the fact that you just brought it up right now. It is just, I don't really know what words I can say to describe how great this is, because it is genuinely really difficult to find a good mentor
And the fact that you're able to be the middleman and have set this all up, it's just fantastic. So thank you, Debbie, for sharing that with us and for joining us today. If our listeners want to find you and the Mentor Project and follow all of your work, where can they go?
They can find me at deborahheiser.com. They can email me at deborahheiser@gmail.com. They can also find me at mentorproject.org. It's www.mentorproject.org. You can find me on LinkedIn, Deborah Heiser, Twitter, Deborah Heiser. Pretty much if you type in Deborah Heiser, you'll find me. But I do really say to you and to everybody else, if you want a mentor and you're a student, it's free and you can connect with some of the top leaders in the world to be able to get mentored.
All right, amazing. We'll link those in the show notes. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
You've been listening to the Self-Improvement Atlas, the Personal Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. For more episodes like these from 10 different life management perspectives, search LMSL on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can get updated on everything we have to offer. We have a wide range of topics readily available for you to check out. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps us grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at pe.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Marie Stella. Thanks for tuning in.